Good evening, this is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 795, March the 2nd, 1987. The two big stories of the week, or the two that got the most attention, were the forced resignation of Chief of Staff Donald Reagan and the Senator Tower report on the National Security Council. For the past few weeks, I've been going into the narcotics connections, gun running and narcotics connections, of people involved in Contragate and their links up to the White House, the Chief of Staff, the former Chief of Staff, and the Vice President of the United States, and I will be doing a lot of the drug connections for weeks to come. I just will do a little bit this evening on Donald Reagan. He's not through yet. He may be out of the White House, but I'm sure there will be repercussions of having forced him out of the White House. On March the 2nd, 1986, the Chief of Staff, Donald Reagan's firm, Merrill Lynch, the one that he managed for many, many years, was chairman of, was blackballed from the management committee of the London Stock Exchange. Members voted against Merrill, various persons, including Merrill Lynch, in its rules committee, citing, in quotes, a long history of disreputable practices at Merrill Lynch. Donald Reagan headed it for 12 years. In 1981, when Ronald Reagan was running for president, up to the point where he was inaugurated, he was working for donating money to Carter Mondale heavily to become Secretary of the Treasury if they won. And, of course, he was firmly behind Ronald Reagan and became Secretary of the Treasury. He would have had the job under either administration. He's that important. While he was at Merrill Lynch, Donald Reagan turned that firm into what was described by the Crime Commission reports and in various lawsuits and investigations. It became a drug money laundry place for large investments of mafia organized crime, putting the money into Merrill Lynch. At the U.S. Treasury, he worked very hard in those 4 years to make it possible for the entire U.S. banking system to become dependent on the amount of money, the liquidity that they got from illegal narcotics revenues, by setting up offshore banking that could be used for narcotics, and also a banking system where the bulk of the money can be taken out of American banks, then the deposits and cash they need come from the drug connections or the banks collapse. The President's Commission, and I'm talking about President Ronald Reagan's Commission on Organized Crime, with Executive Director Charles Harmon, said that, in quotes, bankers shouldn't help narcotic traffickers, and bankers have to choose to prevent the trafficking. On June the 13th, 1985, Attorney General Edwin Meese wrote to Vice President George Bush, and of course all of this is comical, because starting in 1985, Donald Reagan moved from the Treasury to become Chief of Staff of the White House. And Meese wrote, in quotes, criminals and drug trafficking rings couldn't operate so successfully without the means to launder money, making criminal activity appear legitimate and available for investments. In 1978, while Donald Reagan was chairman of Merrill Lynch, he entered into a series of business ventures in New York that were based with the Boston Bank, the White Weld Securities Company. They merged Merrill Lynch and the White Weld to the Credit Suisse that the Boston Bank was head of in Zurich, Switzerland. And that group, Merrill Lynch, Suisse, and Weld, it became a triangle there, dominate the $49 million yearly euro-dollar market overseas and control this huge amount of money that is overseas through the White Weld Securities, Credit Suisse, and Merrill Lynch. And this became a haven for drug money. Credit Suisse received more than $1.2 billion in unreported cash transactions in 1982-83 in violation of law from their main branch, the Bank of Boston. In 1984, President Reagan's Commission on Organized Crime, headed by Judge Kaufman, had a report titled The Cash Connection, Organized Crime, Financial Institutions, and Money Laundering. They reported, in quotes, Merrill Lynch was key to Pizza Connections, a Sicilian mafia network inaugurated in 1981, stretching from Palermo to Milan to New York, New Jersey area, operating through pizza parlors which flooded the east coast of the U.S. with high-grade Golden Crescent heroin from Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan province on the northwest frontier. Now, Ollie North and General Singh Laub and General Secord and Adnan Khashoggi and Albert Hakim and Edwin Wilson and Thomas Kleins, The very people involved in the ContraGate story were very much a part of narcotics traffic in Southeast Asia, trying to take back Cuba for Marlansky and the Mafia, and that was what the invasion of Bay of Pigs was for, bringing in narcotics from the Vietnam War. And the big story of our dealing with Khomeini, dealing with Iran, the Mossad at the very highest level, as I've said before, has more to do with narcotics than it has with the geopolitical strategy of bordering on the Soviet Union. A report came out, as I say, the Kaufman report came out, and then it stated that Treasury Secretary Donald Reagan, he was in the Treasury for 4 years, had sabotaged money laundering law enforcement. He protected known offshore havens for dope money, and he protected dirty business dominated by what was his old firm Merrill Lynch and their current partner Credit Suisse. Donald Reagan's Merrill Lynch laundered his own company when he was the head of it, $4.9 million in small bills for Sicilian mafiosa Franco Della Torre starting in March 1982. Merrill Lynch officially was run by other persons as Don Reagan went to Secretary of the Treasury, but all of this was going on in his company and he's not separate from it. And Larry Speaks, the White House press secretary who resigned just this past month, is now getting $250,000 for the newscaster or the news reports that come out of Merrill Lynch. This report said, according to the President's Commission on Organized Crime, the Cash Connection, Merrill Lynch provided special services to help Della Torre launder the proceeds of heroin sales. In making large cash deposits at Merrill Lynch, Della Torre's practice was to request that security personnel accompany him from his hotel to Merrill Lynch offices. After several such deposits, arrangements were made to escort the money from Della Torre's hotel directly to the banker's trust, where Merrill Lynch maintained accounts. Now, Judge Kaufman, as I mentioned him before, was the judge that prosecuted the Rosenbergs. He's hardly a liberal, and he's writing about a firm that was doing these transactions and now has their chairman as the Secretary of our Treasury. The Kaufman report goes on. Della Torre had an account in a corporate named Traex, T-R-A-E-X, with Merrill Lynch for 1 year. A bagman for the Pizza Connection ring, Della Torre laundered an estimated $20 million through Merrill Lynch and other brokerage houses into sheltered accounts at Credit Suisse in Zurich, Switzerland. Della Torre, according to the commission report, brought his gym bags and cardboard cartons full of small denomination bills to a suite in New York's Waldorf Astoria Towers, where top executives of Merrill Lynch would regularly make pickups of the cash for deposit at Merrill Lynch accounts at the banker's trust. The Merrill Lynch officers even arranged security guards to accompany Della Torre to the hotel. During the entire period, Della Torre's deposits were under observation by the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration, and to this day, no action has been taken against Merrill Lynch. Italian magistrates are now prosecuting 440 top mafiosi in Italy in relation to the Pizza Connection. Their operation ties into more than 100 murders, including those of law enforcement officials such as Carabinieri, National Police, General Carlo Alberto Dalla Chiesa, and I mentioned him before, if several years ago when he was murdered, the chief investigator of the links between organized crime, drugs, red brigades, terrorists in Italy. Now, the person that was investigating the Pizza Connections and the red brigades and drugs at the same time was going into the area of the Super Seize Me, the Italian intelligence with Henry Kissinger, Michael Ledeen, and Alexander Haig, who tied directly into the Pizza Connections that were depositing their money into Donald Reagan's Merrill Lynch. Lots of money that has been named by the president who appoints Donald Reagan as his Treasury Secretary and then his chief of the White House staff. While all these investigations are going on, he has a cabinet administration position with the President of the United States. The report said the Pizza Connection also cuts directly into Bulgarian Drug and Assassins Bureau through Masoulia Yasar Avni, the Turkish mafia boss who operates out of Sofia, Bulgaria. Masoulia's heroin shipping and gun running operation in Zurich, Switzerland were funded out of Swiss accounts into the Merrill Lynch funneled money. And this connects again into Ali Mehmet Aja, his relationship to Theodore Shackley, who is heavily involved in the ContraGate story and a defendant in the Christic Institute suit of drug running, assassinations, and attempted coups, all the crimes that go with terrorism or freedom fighters around Reagan. The Italian sources are convinced that the recent death in the prison of Vatican banker Michele Sindona, who bit the cyanide bullet, was the latest assassination ordered to protect the pizza connection. Credit Suisse is the world's dirtiest bank, according to this report, and also mentioned in the congressional record, June 27, 1985, testimony of Senator Jesse Helms, no flaming liberal. He linked the June 14th, interestingly enough, June 14th, 1985 hijacking flight 847 by the Lebanese Shiites to 100 million Lebanese pounds found delivered by the Shiites by the Iranians Martyrs Foundation. Helms had the following report on the source of the funds. It is unclear whether these funds were delivered as actual money or delivered in the form of banking instrument which could be drawn against the Martyrs Foundation, held, for example, by Marine Midland Bank in London and Credit Suisse in Switzerland. And the links of narcotics, TWA flight, and banks goes again to persons in the National Security Council and the Chief of Staff of the White House. In September 1978, Merrill Lynch Chairman Donald Reagan, this is 3 years before he was Secretary of the Treasury, arranged Merrill Lynch's takeover of White Weld Securities. This put Merrill Lynch in effective business partnership with Credit Suisse, the money laundering business that has been going on effectively controlled through its joint venture with White Weld in Boston. Credit Suisse White Weld, which provided White Weld with 75% of its annual earnings, Credit Suisse is accused of laundering the bulk of $1.67 billion in heroin traffic at issue in the Pizza Connection case. Merrill Lynch is accused of having laundered $3.9 million of this money. And Credit Suisse in Geneva is the bank. It has three branches in Switzerland. It is the bank identified, or one of the banks, involved with Permandex and the assassination of John Kennedy and other political figures around the world. Through various documents, Credit Suisse is one of those banks. Now, I'll do more on Donald Reagan and the banking connections later, but I think you get a view of why it was so hard to fire him from the White House and why he sat there and literally kept the President of the United States a prisoner inside the White House, and it was very hard to extricate him out. Now, this past week, February the 27th, there's an article in the New York Times, and it was in all the wire services. Warrants for Vatican bankers raise legal problems. The country of Italy has asked the individual entity called the Vatican to turn over three persons involved in the collapse of the Banco Ambrosiano. The chief one that they want is Archbishop Paul Marcinkus, the head of the Vatican Bank, and two other persons. And these people are wanted for the collapse of that bank, for other banks, for writing money with credit from the Vatican to Banco Ambrosiano. And, of course, the lawsuit says that Archbishop Marcinkus, as well as Mr. Menini and Mr. Distrobel in the Vatican, effectively authorized Banco Ambrosiano to give loans of over $1.3 billion into 10 Panama dummy companies with few or no assets. The funds were later used as collateral to secure existing debts or get fresh loans. Large amounts of the loans have not been accounted for, though the Milan investigators suspect at least some of the money went to the Italian Masonic Lodge called Propaganda II. And again, Michael Ledeen of Contragate and Henry Kissinger are members of the P2 Lodge out of Monte Carlo. The Panama banks are tied up now into approximately 12 or 14 banks that the investigators want to go into in the Contragate story. The Panama banks, the Swiss banks, are very important. But at this time, the Archbishop Marcinkus is wanted, and they mention in this article that when the Banco Ambrosiano collapsed 6 weeks later, Chairman Roberta Calvi, a close associate of Archbishop Marcinkus, was found hanged at a London bridge. So Michele Sindona, another one of God's bankers, along with Roberta Calvi, the president of the Banco Ambrosiano, are mentioned in murders because they're witnesses to these events. Now the people who want to know where this $1.3 billion went and who are the 10 Panamanian dummy fronts, they actually were doorknobs with numbers on them. Where did this go? And the P2 money, of course, is to begin, you know, making the whole world Christian, to have military coups, to put in fascist dictators. It was a secret society that surfaced with many people related to Henry Kissinger Alexander Haig, Ronald Reagan, and the team in the White House that worked very closely with Nazis, narcotics traffic, assassinations, and coups. I made a chart this week of 13 major lawsuits pending in terms of ContraGate involving missing money, one with missing $10 million, another missing $10 million, another $30 million, the Bank Ambrosiano, that $1.4 billion, and trials and investigations of missing money or ContraGate suits. And in a way, they all link to each other. It's a very complicated network, but there's no way that even someone like John Tower, hand-selected by the president, is able to carry on and cover up as much as he would want to cover up, because the door is open now and the toothpaste is not going back in the tube. And as Ronald Reagan's son sets, the sun is going down on his administration, and for all purposes it's over. Newsweek has a cover of the president cover-up. To protect the president, staffers say Don Reagan ordered to conceal the approval of arms sales and so forth. And there's a black and white picture of Ronald Reagan, very dismal, and many articles accompany this throughout the world press and on television. One-third of the people, according to polls, and I don't like polls, say that he should resign. But on the cover of Newsweek, under the black cover and black and white picture of Ronald Reagan in disarray, is a yellow box with an article authored by Henry Kissinger, Gorbachev's Challenge by Henry Kissinger. And above all the chaos, all the people that are fired, all the people that are killed, all the lives that are ruined, up at the top remain Fritz Kramer, Fred Ickley, Daniel Graham, Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and Alexander Haig. And Henry Kissinger, always like in Watergate, with Alexander Haig setting up Agnew and Nixon for the fall, they remain the elder statesmen. The same Newsweek then has a picture of Kissinger smiling, shaking hands with Mr. Gorbachev in the Soviet Union, titled Kissinger, How to Deal with Gorbachev. And he becomes the traveling statesman, just as he was at the time of Watergate, when he gets the Nobel Peace Prize and goes to the Soviet Union, and Nixon and Agnew are removed from office, and there's chaos for a short while, but these men always have control. When Reagan made a blunder at Reykjavik, he was forced to go there because of the Danilov arrest, and I've done many broadcasts on that. Out of that whole bag of chaos comes Alexander Haig, and of course, in the Washington Times, Reverend Moon's paper, he has a long article, or an article about him. Haig second-guesses Reagan on Reykjavik and the near mishap, and it tells how Haig's addressing the Heritage Foundation, how they have to save the Reykjavik and what went on there. And another article, Reagan was ill-prepared for Reykjavik. And New York Times has an editorial, exercise Reykjavik, forget it never happened. Let's go back to the bargaining tables. Reagan is expendable. Pretend he didn't go there. He made a blunder. The statesmen survive above him. He is like the garbage people, expendable. And this chaos continues as various people lose jobs and get immunity and so forth, but the power structure remains the same and is very visible in articles on television and holding a tight line. There's a lot of publicity around Fawn Hall, the secretary for Oliver North. She also was dating Arturo Cruz, and North was giving her boyfriend's father $7,000 a month. Money's supposed to go to the Contras to Mr. Calero, but money under the table to them. Wilma Hall, her mother, until McFarlane was fired and then goes on working for National Security Council. Anyway, Wilma Hall, her mother, at the time of the ContraGate, was secretary to Robert McFarlane. She formerly was secretary to Henry Kissinger in the National Security Council in 1970s. ContraGate is a continuation of Watergate. McFarlane goes, Kissinger stays. Jane Esther McLaughlin was secretary to Carl Spitz Chanel. Finally, she left the FBI and told about the things that Chanel was doing and the money that was supposed to go to the Contras going into political pockets, and I'll do a lot more on that later. She formerly worked for Donald Reagan out of Merrill Lynch and went to Chanel's office while he was instrumental in trying to get people into Congress who voted for Star Wars or voted for the Contras and defeat those people in the American political scene who didn't want Star Wars and didn't want to fund the Contras. General John Gavin, the former head of NATO, was quickly removed from this past week. I like to see these job changes taking place. He was in charge of U.S. Southern Command in Panama, 1984 to 1986, where all these dummy fronts and money and ships were arriving with weapons and connections to illegal operations in Central America that Congress didn't approve of. John Gavin has now become the head of NATO, and formerly in 1970s, he was military assistant to Alexander Haig when Haig used NATO, the P2, the Masonic Lodge, and so forth for terrorism in Europe, for creating things like the Red Brigades, and we need somebody over there to wipe up the scene, the Shovel Brigade. So quickly, the man formerly down in Panama when the banking chaos was taking place is now in Europe in with NATO, the head of NATO, and again, Kissinger has his secretaries in these various offices. He has Alexander Haig has agents related to him militarily who take the job that he had, and Haig and Kissinger, Kramer, Fred Eakley, and Daniel Graham, another one of that team, stay in the background very nicely without being visible at all. In 1983, when I wrote the story of Larry McDonald's being killed in the Korean airline, it actually came out in February 84. I wrote it just in the fall of 83, as soon as the plane went down. I did a map. Many of you have the article I wrote with a picture of the Larry McDonald pie. And there were sections of the importance of Larry McDonald, national, international, and why I believe the article was based upon information that I had studied, and why I believe that Ronald Reagan and Edwin Meese had the most in having Larry McDonald's demise at that particular time. And one section of the pie was titled Western Goals, and he was chairman of Western Goals. At that time, it was located in Alexandria, Virginia, and on the board was Roy Cohn and Dr. Eugene Wigner, who works with the atomic energy and is close to Daniel Graham in Star Wars, Admiral Thomas Moore, Dr. Edward Teller of Star Wars, and, of course, there's General John Singlaub, John Reese, General George Patton III, and Linda Gull, G-U-E-L-L. I had her name in that pie picture I made of the important elements of people behind Larry McDonald. Now, Linda Gull's name is in the news in many articles this past week. It has to do with the office of Mr. Channel, Carl Spitz Channel, the public relations office that works closely with Oliver North and Thomas Buchanan, the former press secretary. And the offices there are very closely linked to Linda Gull. Now, Channel became the director of Western Goals after Larry McDonald was killed. Wall Street Journal has an article just this past week, February 27th. Reagan officials misled Congress, helped Contras get military aid during two-year ban. And in this article in the Wall Street Journal, it says there's a diagram sketched by Colonel North on an April 1985 letter showing arrows linking to names of F. Andrew Messing. We've seen him on television and read about him. Director of the Conservative National Defense Council, Robert Owen, and that's an important name, a defendant in the Christic Institute suit for, again, gun running, assassination, attempted coups, and so forth, narcotics traffic. Robert Owen, a former State Department consultant linked to the Contras, and Lyndon Gull, G-U-E-L-L, director of Western Goals, an organization headed by Carl Spitz Channel. So the importance of Western Goals has never really been understood by a lot of people. I wrote about it, but those researchers that have the articles didn't recognize the importance of it. But these offices of Channel are indeed important. The money is used to overthrow the electoral process to make it possible that when we have another election, or as many as we have, the proper people will be elected, just as Adolf Hitler was elected in 1933. There were many articles this past week mentioning Linda and her relationship to Mr. Channel's office, and he became, as I said, the president of Western Goals, and she works for him. She was formerly with Larry McDonald in Western Goals. Her name is mentioned in the New York Times, February the 27th. Albert Hakim his offices were robbed recently up in Los Gatos, and papers were taken, linking the transfer of weapons from used aircraft with a Korean airline to Iran. And then, of course, after the papers were returned, then the story was that all they took out of his office was the Korean Airlines and security for Korea, and they erased the delivery of arms to Iran. Now, the Korean airline, the KAL, is a very important story linked to all these various characters, and I've done outlines and charts, but I want to just bring it up today because Linda Jewell's name from Western Ghouls is in these articles and her work for Channel and is being a conduit of money that was not supposed to be sent for military aid because the Congress voted. It wasn't supposed to be. And, of course, I said all along that Western Ghouls is an operation linked directly to the Los Angeles Police Department. The agents of the police department were recognized as taking papers out of the offices. They were put into computers of Western Ghouls. And the extensive coverage of Western Ghouls never made the major wire services, but they have direct pipelines to A or all police departments to put information about law-abiding citizens or people they don't want or people they don't want to run for office. So the significance of Western Ghouls is in the news now, and those offices are important. And I think that in time, the exposure of Western Ghouls for what it is should be questioned into how many police departments it taps $100,000 computers, and are they still doing the same? Mr. J. Paul, the LAPD agent who took the papers to his wife's garage where the $100,000 computer was, Mary Love, was reinstated at the police department. He was never fired, and he was actually rewarded because he got all his back pay, and they decided there was nothing wrong with taking private police reports to his garage and sending them to this cast of characters in Virginia and in Washington, D.C., who later appear to be breaking many laws, not just a law, and goodness knows why they put into their computer information about law-abiding citizens, and yet they go about breaking the law. Seymour Hersh is going to write a book about Muammar Gaddafi and the plans to kill him by the Reagan administration. He's working on it now. And there have been reprints of part of the book syndicated in almost every newspaper I've taken. The New York Times has a long section of that book, February 22nd, 1987, Target Gaddafi. And you know, I've told you before that Seymour Hersh thought it was impossible that these people, these very people that he's writing about now, would target Larry McDonald going down in the ocean at the time he was to testify about his computers with the police department of Western Ghouls. But with his links with John Singlau and Edward Teller and Eugene Wigner, Wigner working close with Reverend Moon, always recognized and honored by him, and George Patton III and the who's who of the military right, Larry McDonald was perfectly expendable at that time, and furthermore, he could trigger off reactions of the Soviet Union to airplanes entering in their space, and then knowing it would blow up, they can blame the Soviet Union for being the terrible black empire they were. A lot of things were accomplished, and I mentioned those in my article and on the air many times, and I think that the fact that Larry McDonald was killed, I believe he was killed by these people. I'm sorry Seymour Hersh didn't see that at the time. Now he sees how they went out and set to kill Muammar Gaddafi and didn't think anything of it, hoping they still can take the country called Libya. And if people behave in this way, they earmark a country and persons for murder, they can do it in one area and get just as much effect as they do in another. There was an article in the Washington Post, I'm not going to share the whole article now, by Bob Woodward and Dan Oberdorfer, and they're also writing a book on Contragate, telling about the United States' plans to attack Libya. It's a long article, but there's just two sentences I want to share with you about this article at this time. It says, from Reagan's first full day in office, January the 21st, 1981, he focused on Libya and Iran and made opinions of what he was going to do with those countries, how he was going to attack them, and even after the TWA hijacking, when the 847, and it was televised and investigated, even though it didn't link Gaddafi or Libya to the hijacking in any way, and Seymour Hersh, Bob Woodward rather writes on this one, it's Hersh with the KAL and Gaddafi. He said, although there is no direct connection between Libya and the TWA hijacking, top officials of the NSC and CIA were determined to get tough on Libya, no matter if there were no connections, they were going to use that to get tough on Libya. But it says, in mid-July 1985, papers written by Robert Gates, who was then head of the Intelligence Analysis Agency and now nominee for CIA director, reported that U.S. and Egypt should operate against Libya because it would present an opportunity to redraw the map of North Africa. Now, How does a Robert Gates, not elected by anybody, wants to be the CIA director, have the capacity to say, we'll kill these people, we'll take that land? That is why Gaddafi was armed by Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple to make him the terrorist, so we could come back, take the land, and redo the map of North Africa. In their own words, they were to redraw the map of North Africa. I'll take a... These people make these plans years ahead, and then when Ronald Reagan is inaugurated, the very first day they meet, the plans proceed. The terrorism, the agents provocateurs, set it up so that we can come in, take these countries, own the Mediterranean, own Africa, shape it to our liking. That is what they are doing. And Gates, who wrote this memo on his goals, wants to be the CIA director, as I say. We'll take a one-minute break, and then I want to get back to Senator John Tower, not his report, but John Tower himself and his shenanigans in Washington and in Texas.